say that words like evil and the devil are just mythological or superstitious. There's just a natural order, and sometimes the natural order produces tragedy. Life has a tragic side to it, and these kind of events have no moral qualities. So then, for those writers, evil is just a personified way of talking about horrifying behavior. Other people say, no, we need a notion like the Christian devil or the Jewish devil to convey the intensity and to convey the fact that we don't really understand what's going on. We don't have a full explanation of evil. Mythic images are potent. They give special meaning. They capture the imagination. They preserve the element of mystery. So there's still a very strong school of thought which wants to preserve the important notion of a devil. They say we need some kind of mythic image to be able to capture the dimension of meaning, to be able to capture the depth of the experience, something that's emotionally powerful, that goes beyond rational thinking. And if you try to, these people say, if you try to be too scientific without using mythological metaphors like the devil, you're too reductive. There is no really rational, ultimately no rational explanation for evil. But secular people, I've heard this argued many times, say there is no hidden spiritual force causing evil. Evil is just should just be understood as a kind of disorder, as a kind of aberration. And if you use the word evil, it's too much of a moral absolute. It's an obsolete hangover from simplistic religious thinking. For example, there are some people who have no capacity for empathy. They can't feel emotionally what the other person is feeling. Empathy is something that we evolved as human beings, probably, and it probably helped us with parenting skills to be able to sense what the baby needs. And it's empathy which inhibits our hurting other people. We know if we do certain things, we'll hurt people. So empathy is extremely important. But there are a lot of people, unfortunately, who have no capacity for empathy. Sometimes that's associated with a brain lesion of some kind. Sometimes people never experienced empathy when they were growing up. So they have. If you never experienced a reasonable level of empathic parenting, you have no concept of what empathy really is. And then empathy is a kind of a medical... The lack of empathy is kind of a medical condition. Narcissistic people are notoriously lacking in empathy. Narcissistic people are self-absorbed, mostly concerned with themselves. And they have very little interest in what other people are feeling. Psychopaths, are the malignant narcissists, are a good example. They rarely have any empathy. One can also suppress empathy. Sometimes when you walk past a homeless person on the street who looks like they're in terrible shape, you may have to suppress empathy just to be able to get past the person. So sometimes we have to suppress empathy because it stimulates our own suffering too much. So we have these splitting defenses where somehow we manage to put it out of our mind, and we can make ourselves numb to the suffering of other people sometimes. And this allows us to commit evil. So indifference to evil is an enormous problem. And in order to maintain indifference, we have to use defenses of psychic numbing and splitting and projection so that we're not constantly being affected by the evil that's all around us. But empathy is not the whole story. There are sadistic, cruel people who are empathic, and in fact, they use their empathy to enjoy the suffering of their victim. There are people who enjoy torturing other people, and they enjoy the pain of the victim using empathy. So the empathy issue is a partial explanation, but it's not a complete explanation for why people are able to treat others in an evil way. What about intention and motivation? Is it important to insist on what the intention or the motivation was when we decide whether an act was evil or not? The problem that we run into here is if you think about situations like the burning of the witches or heretics in medieval times, or the behavior of the inquisitors, who genuinely believed, I mean, I suppose some of them were sadistic people, but some of them probably genuinely believed that they were saving souls. So their motivation and their intention might have actually been good, even though they were doing something that we now regard as very wicked, acting in accordance of the word of God, fighting evil. So in other words, you might commit real evil in the sincere belief that you're doing something good. There are many people who said that when Hitler massacred the Jews of Europe, he genuinely thought he was exterminating something that was bad for the country. So that we have to be careful about using words like intention and motivation. So, and the other problem with this emphasis on motivation is that an act might turn out to be evil, even if the intentions were good. And then, of course, you can commit an evil act without intending to do so. So motivation and intention are not adequate criteria for deciding if something is evil. Terrorists are evil from the point of view of their victims, but they regard themselves as religious devotees or freedom fighters. So from their point of view and the point of view of their community, their motives are quite admirable. So for these kind of reasons, many people adopt what's called a victim approach. The only thing that matters in this view is the suffering of the victims. When you're trying to decide whether an act is evil, what matters is the effect on the victims, not the motivation or lack of motivation of the perpetrator. Evil is anything that deprives others of the basics needed to make life tolerable and decent: food, water, sleep, freedom, and so on. It would be evil to not allow people to live a life that feels as if it's worth living for its own sake. Now, is there something psychologically unique about people who commit evil acts, or are they ordinary people in extraordinary situations? In other words, can ordinary people commit evil? Just ordinary people like you and I, or do you have to be a special person to commit real evil? What is it that sets apart ordinary people from truly evil people? What about the classic example here is the Germans who went along with the Holocaust. Were those Germans who went along with the Holocaust, who were not necessarily Nazis, were they really ordinary people who were just under the influence of a totalitarian government? Were they just lacking in self-awareness? Were they just stupid? Were they just indifferent? Were they lacking empathy? Were they actually prone to violence and sadism? And they were put in a situation in which the social circumstances allowed their innate capacity to evil to express itself. You can see evil as a psychological potential that's released by social factors. These social factors will break down internal restraints that we all have against committing evil. There's a famous story of middle-aged men from Hamburg who were members of a reserve police battalion who became savage murderers of the Jewish population of Poland. And the literature tells us that of the 500 policemen who carried out these mass murders of the Jews in Eastern Europe, even though they were offered the chance to be relieved of duty, only 12 of the 500 actually accepted the offer to be relieved of duty. There were no serious consequences if they said they didn't want to participate in killing unarmed civilians, but only 12 of 500 backed out. So why were these apparently ordinary policemen able to commit mass murder? Were they latent sadists that were just given an opportunity to kill? Was it just obedience to authority? Was it peer pressure? Or was it true hatred? it's been quite a big argument about this. These were called the Einsatzgruppen. They were mobile SS killing units in Poland, and only 12% of them were members of the Nazi Party. Most of them were not. Most of them were ordinary people. Now, many of these ordinary people who went around killing innocent people, men, women, and children, had to stay drunk all the time in order to continue to do what they were doing. They had to be routinely given large amounts of alcohol to enable them to function, and some of them did break down psychologically. The actual commanding general of the SS in Eastern Europe, his name was Bach Zaluski, and he directed these murders of tens of thousands of people. He was eventually hospitalized for a psychological breakdown. So it did take an emotional toll on the people. Now, the argument that followed is these people did have the option not to kill, but they were not really ordinary. They had a long history of murderous anti-Semitism, okay? And this led to the willing participation of these people in the Holocaust, and that the Holocaust could never have happened without the tacit approval and consent of the ordinary people of the population. So it cannot. So the Holocaust cannot be attributed to a psychopathic, sadistic minority. And part of the evidence for this is that these Einsatzgruppen policemen would murder and torture the Eastern European Jews in particularly brutal ways. They didn't only shoot them. They tortured them at the same time. And yet most of the research that was done on the SS showed that very few of them were actual psychopaths. They didn't seem to have been coerced into following the orders of the Nazi regime. When you look at the newsreels of the time and how excited they were at the Anschluss, they seemed to be quite happy. They seemed to be idealizing Hitler. They thought it was a good thing what was going on. They didn't seem to be acting under duress. But a lot of them denounced their Jewish neighbors even when they were not coerced into doing so. And people say this is because the Nazi propaganda coincided with these long-standing historical attitudes, largely based on centuries and centuries of anti-Jewish church propaganda. So the population was kind of primed for this kind of behavior. Other people have said that the Nazi electoral success occurred during a period in which the German economy was actually improving. The Nazis were able to transform ordinary people into murderers. How is it that millions of ordinary people in Germany could be transformed into evildoers? Was this due to an evil core of the personality awaiting its opportunity? Or did these people have to be trained to doing what they're doing? There were apparently ordinary processes of learning and social forces were enough to make the Germans murderers by inches, gradually taking small but increasing steps to greater and greater atrocities. And the population was just caught up in the process, perhaps not realizing what was happening until it was too late. That's why it's very difficult, it's very important to combat any kind of prejudice or racism early on, because once it starts to take hold in the population, it escalates and becomes extremely difficult. That's why it's very dangerous to have authoritarian leaders. What you have to do in a situation like this is you have to silence your conscience. Most people have a natural inbuilt aversion to killing other people. Human beings seem to be born with an aversion to killing other human beings. That's why the military has to train people in boot camp to becoming killers. We don't like to do it. So then you have to focus on your duty to the authorities, focus on the details of your work. And if you have a conflict between your behavior and your feelings and your personal preferences, you have to convince yourself that doing the killing is doing your duties to what you regard as a legitimate authority. You may have to force yourself to overcome moral and visceral revulsion against the actions that you have to do. But then if you think you're doing the right thing because the authorities have told you it's okay to do this, you may not have a bad conscience.